694? Take two.
Every time you kiss me, I'm still not certain that you love me. Every time you hold me, I'm still not certain that you care. Though you keep on saying you really, really, really love me, do you speak the same words to someone else when I'm not there? Suspicion torments my heart. Suspicion keeps us apart. Suspicion, why torture me? Every time you call me and tell me we should meet tomorrow, I can't help but think that you're meeting someone else tonight. Why should our romance just keep on causing me such sorrow? Why am I so doubtful whenever you are out of sight? Suspicion torments my heart. Suspicion keeps us apart. Suspicion, why torture me? Darling, if you love me, I beg you, wait a little longer. Wait until I drive all these foolish tears right out my mind. How I hope and pray that our love will keep on growing stronger. Maybe I'm suspicious, cause true love is so hard to find. Suspicion torments my heart. Suspicion keeps us apart. Suspicion, why torture me?
Full of flavor since 1940.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome back, everybody, to the David Pacman Show. Luke Beasley here, filling in for David today while he is away. I don't want to waste any time, so let's just jump right in. Donald Trump spoke over the weekend at the Faith and Freedom Coalition event in Nashville, Tennessee. This was one of his first chances, actually his first chance in speech form, at least, to address the bombshells that have been revealed in the three January 6th hearings that have happened so far. And it was also a chance for him to do, you know, what he normally does in speeches, which is go through his greatest hits of talking points and then kind of get on random tangents about random things. So we're going to be looking at some of the moments from that speech today, starting with Trump saying that no teacher should be teaching students transgender. What that means, I don't know. Not about transgender people, not any way you could say that properly. About transgender, singular. Let's take a look.
Pushing woke gender ideology. Woke gender ideology. Think of it. On young people is nothing less than child abuse. No teacher should ever be allowed to teach transgender to our children without the parents' consent. And I don't think too many people are going to be giving that consent, Mark. Not too many.
Man, we got to keep those teachers from teaching about transgender. Wow. Of course, he's playing into the right's favorite fear-mongering device as of late, which is the LGBTQ community, doing everything they can to make their followers distracted from anything except being afraid of people who are not like them. Then Trump moved on to speaking about the public January 6th hearings and went on this tangent about how great of a nickname the Unselect Committee is what he calls it. It's the Select Committee investigating January 6th, but he calls it the Unselect Committee. And he was very proud of coming up with this nickname. And I was actually watching his speech on my own live stream, which you can subscribe to my channel at Luke Beasley on YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the podcast, there will be a link in the description. You can just click it, go to my channel, subscribe. Or if you listen to podcasts, I also put it out in audio form so you can search my name on any podcast listening platform. But I was watching his speech on a live stream and he got into this tangent about, ooh, the Unselect Committee. Isn't that such a great nickname? And for some reason, it just tickled me so much. So I had to include it. Here's that.
Being staged by the Unselect Committee. I love that name, Unselect. You know, they hate it, right? But they act like there's nothing wrong because they just don't want it. They're very good at what they do. They're con people. They're con artists. I say the Unselect, you're supposed to be the Select Committee on January, you know, like these people are legitimate. The Unselects. So I call them the Unselects. And they act like, oh, they never mention it. I think it's one of the great. They never mention it. Someday they'll give me credit for that term. I had a lot of good terms. We had a lot of good nicknames, didn't we? Didn't we have great nicknames? I think this is one of the best. I don't know. It's not catching on because they won't let it catch on.
Just a genius of comedy and of burns. Man, I can't even take it. And then he moved on to talking about how calm of a speech January 6th was. He said it possibly was his calmest speech that he's ever given. Wow. Can you believe it?
To various speeches, including one I gave. Remember the calm words I used? They try and make them sound like that was the calm. That might have been the calmest speech I think I've ever made, if you want to know. I've had a couple of senators say, I never knew you could be so nice.
Next, he points out that for some reason, the January 6th hearings aren't focused on the election lies that I've been telling. Of course, in his mind, they're not focusing on the massive fraud, or he called it the stuff we want to hear. They're not focusing on the stuff we want to hear. Let's go ahead and take a look at that.
How crooked it was. Meanwhile, the committee refuses to play any of the tape of people saying the good things, the things that we want to hear. It's a one-way street. It's a rigged deal.
Can you imagine? The January 6th hearing is not spending time focusing on the lies that caused the event that the January 6th hearing is even looking into. Wild. Finally, he decides to go ahead and talk about Mike Pence. And in that, he denies that he called Mike Pence a wimp, which is one of the things that came out of these hearings, was people saying they remembered him taking this really harsh tone against Mike Pence and calling him a wimp, as well as other things. But apparently that didn't happen, according to Trump.
One guy got up and said that he heard me calling Mike Pence a wimp. Now, in honesty, I'm the president of the United States. You know, I'm sitting, I think they said at my desk, he's a wimp. How many people listen to me? It's like, I don't even know who these people are. But I never called Mike Pence a wimp. I never called him a wimp. Mike Pence had a chance to be great. He had a chance to be, frankly, historic. But just like Bill Barr and the rest of these weak people, Mike, and I say it sadly because I like him, but Mike did not have the courage to act.
So there we go. Nothing too surprising from him in his response. Just going on with the same lies about the 2020 election, pretending that Pence should have stepped in the way of our constitutional process. And he's just further increasing the likelihood that they will attempt to do this again, and maybe it'll be successful next time. And that's what really scares me. All the evidence that has come out during these hearings hasn't made him stop for one moment to think, maybe I should go ahead and move on from this. And obviously, I didn't think he was going to come out and become this defender of democracy and, you know, revoke all the things he said before. No. But I at least hoped it would be so embarrassing, the hard evidence that was presented in these hearings, which I think they've done a good job of doing, but I was hoping that would at least get him to go, I'm going to back off of this a little bit, even if I'm not going to ever change what I believe or change what I say publicly. I'm just going to stop talking about it so much. But no, his only response to all of this is to keep telling the lies that got us into this mess. And that is very, very frightening. Guys, this next story is pitiful. Ever since the Uvalde shooting, there's been a spike in the discussions, rightfully so, about gun control. And that means many more Republicans than usual are going to have to be asked why they stand in the way of any common sense gun reform. And shockingly enough, a host on Fox News actually asks Senator Mike Lee a really good question. And she shows polling on the support for a number of these big main common sense gun reforms that people push for, and shows just how wildly popular they are. And then asks Senator Mike Lee, aren't you out of step with your constituents if these items, these proposals are this popular? Let's look at how he responds.
Behind some of these proposals at this point, some of these proposals, background checks for guns, which by and large, most of them are background checked before you do a purchase. 88%, though, moving the legal age for an assault rifle purchase is at 82%. Flagging for people who are a danger to themselves or others, those red flag laws, 81%, and banning assault weapons, 63%. There is a lot of momentum, at least among the public sphere, for doing this. Are you out of step with your constituents?
Okay, so first of all, what's important is that we look out for the rights of constituents. Constituents are asked poll questions. They're not asked questions about specific language within legislative text. It's the job of the lawmaker to look out for the interest and the rights of the law-abiding citizens they represent. And so with each of those provisions, I understand how they could get high popularity ratings when they don't define them. For example, you talk about banning assault weapons. There is no universal definition of what an assault rifle is. Very often the true distinction, it really depends on whether the stock pieces of the gun are made of wood or of plastic or of composite. So the text does matter here because it's that text that will determine whether we're intruding unduly on the rights of the American law-abiding citizen. And doing so in a way that would actually deter violent criminal behavior.
So first off, even though this is not something we should have to do, journalists should always be this way. I want to thank the Fox News host for actually asking a real question. And I just want to make sure you guys don't get at all misled about this, because I think we have the tendency when someone's on television and they finish a complete sentence and then look at the camera confidently, we go, oh, dang, they successfully dodged the question. But no, that entire clip, he said a lot of words with zero substance. He goes on and on about the text of the bill, the text of the bill. Yes, that's your job. You're a legislator. Your job is to take general proposals that are popular in the country and then are popular among your constituents at least, and then implement them. And throughout that process, you work out the specifics of the bill. You work out the details that you are referring to as the text of the bill. We all recognize that universal background checks is a little bit more complicated than just writing down on a bill, universal background checks, go, right? We understand that. You don't need to say that to us, but you as sure as hell should not be using it as an excuse for not acting on the issue. Oh, there's a lot of specifics that we don't know about yet. Well, get working, buddy. His answer, of course, should have been, I absolutely support those proposals you just put on screen. As you mentioned, they are both popular and they would save lives and they don't infringe on our rights. All I want to do now is work on the nuts and bolts of this legislation, and then we'll be able to accomplish the goals set out by those more general positions that you just outlined. But instead, he gives the weakest and laziest answer to get out of genuinely answering why he doesn't support the reforms that would save lives, as I mentioned, and would be in line with his own constituents. He didn't even answer her specific question, really, which was, are you out of line with your constituents? Yes, is the answer to that question. He said effectively, oh, well, the reason is his constituents aren't able to look out for their own rights. That's his job. Well, no, your constituents understand by that polling that it's not an infringement on their right to regulate firearms in a common sense way. And I honestly don't know how people like Mike Lee feel good about themselves after giving an answer that's that slimy and that dishonest. You gave that answer to protect the gun lobby and this delusional idea that any form of regulation and trying to implement any common sense gun reform is revoking the Second Amendment or something. And I know this sometimes comes off as a little bit hyperbolic, but honestly, how do people like Mike Lee live with themselves knowing all of these tragedies are going to happen in the future? Or not all of them, but a number of tragedies are going to happen in the future because we didn't act now. And he's one of the people standing in the way, giving dishonest answers like that for really no good reason. And it's going to cause these tragedies. And I really don't know how people like him live with themselves. I'm sure you are all very familiar at this point with Herschel Walker, who is running for Senate in Georgia against Raphael Warnock. And recently there was a sort of scandal where he made a remark about how, this is the context, this isn't the scandal, but he made a remark about how a problem in the black community is fathers aren't staying with their kids, and they absolutely need to do that, and it's a really big problem. And I mean, we can have a discussion. Of course, we want to encourage people to stay with their kids, absolutely, but that's not really what this is about. It's more a hypocrisy angle. And so just to refresh your memory, let's look at a couple of those moments.
The fatherless home is a major, major problem. Even if you have to leave that woman, you don't leave the child.
Right.
You let that child know, you try to work it out, you're going to be respectful to her, and you're going to be respectful to other things. You show that to your child. Herschel Walker, who was born in Wrightsville, Georgia. You know, I took care of a lot of people in my hometown. I took care of a lot of the places around where I grew up. I was being like a father to some of those kids that may have had fathers.
So generally, I have no problem, as I said, with people encouraging, you know, men to stay in their families and all those things. Of course, that's absolutely what fathers should do. But one of the ways the Republicans specifically get out of answering for any real policy prescriptions they have for the country in regard to these really big problems, sometimes that are more specific to certain communities, is by making it an individual issue. And so instead of proposing large actions that the government could take or actions that we should as a political body invest in time or energy, money, instead, it's all about that guy, that one, and that one, and that one, and that one. It's just they made bad decisions, which on an individual basis, if that person was my friend, yeah, I'd give them that advice. Hey, stay with your kids, right? But on a societal basis, these big problems that he's trying to address in answering whatever question he was answering is something we have to address on a societal basis. Big trends, big issues that we see broadly in our country aren't going to be solved by someone just saying a bunch of rhetoric and people are going to hear stay with your kids and now all of a sudden all these problems are going to be solved. No. If you see broad societal problems, we're going to have broad societal solutions. And those have to be policies that we can implement using our political power. And so Republicans do a really good job of getting out of answering for, hey, what's some policies that you would propose to invest in these communities, uplift them? Instead, they make it's just some bad dudes. That's the core of all these problems. But you and I understand, specifically since he was referring to them, the black community, the way that we solve any problems that we recognize are unique to that community is not just by finger wagging, right? Again, you have a friend, you want to give them that advice, awesome. Or even you want to encourage society broadly, stay with your kids, love your kids. Of course you should do that. But that's not the solution to all of these problems we have that we need to address. And to put a cherry on top of all of it, Herschel Walker's son is very outspoken. He's a conservative. And he put out a video supporting his dad's message that was a little bit cringy.
Fathers, it would be great if you stayed home and raised your kids instead of ran off to bang a bunch of women who weren't your baby mama. Stay home and raise your freaking kids. Your kids need a father. Get back home. Get back home. If you take out your thing and you get a woman pregnant, guess what? The party days are over. The acting foolish days are over. You go get a freaking job and you support your new family. Get home. Raise your...
So very in your face. So that's kind of all the context to the story that we're talking about today. That would mean a lot, maybe more, at least, coming from someone who is living the principles that they're espousing, who is loving and supporting their kids, all of their kids. But after these statements made by Herschel Walker, it came out that he had three children with three separate women who were not previously disclosed to the public, which for someone as famous as him to have kept them unknown for that long, that's not an accident. And there is no way he was active in their lives in the way that he's saying other people should be, or there would be some public record of that, some public record for someone as famous as him. So you would think that would upset, that type of hypocrisy, that type of not living your family values would upset evangelical people, right? That's what they claim to care about. No, I'm sure y'all guessed that. Herschel Walker received resounding applause from evangelical Christian activists on Saturday following revelations he had fathered three children he had not previously discussed publicly. The half-full room of conference goers at the Faith and Freedom Coalition's annual gathering in Nashville went wild for Walker, perhaps the most high-profile Republican Senate candidate this cycle running in one of the most contested races. Even though it is really clear by now that Republicans don't really care about having politicians who live the principles they claim to hold, it still fascinates me every single time when this, you know, blatant examples of hypocrisy come out and they don't care at all. A very clear example of this is Trump. Evangelical Republicans claimed to care about family values, and that's what justified them being super judgmental towards all of these groups who didn't live the way that they wanted them to live, i.e. the LGBTQ community. But then Trump comes along, has a very anti-evangelical past, if you want to say it that way, and they don't care at all. It's wild. And I think this is honestly one of the reasons that they are still as successful as they are, because they'll take anybody. As long as you'll say their talking points, spread their message, act the way that they want you to act, you're in. It's not about consistency. It's not authenticity. It's power. If you can take power and use it towards their ends, the ends they actually care about, then you're a part of the club. And the funny thing is, comparing that to the left is pitiful. Because the left, if you step on a bug, you're out. So we could take a little bit of a lesson from them and be a little bit more tolerant of people with not perfect pasts. But generally, I like where we stand. I'll be following Herschel Walker's race with Raphael Warnock that has been very fascinating so far, but I'll be watching it each step of the way and covering it on my own show. You can find that at Luke Beasley on YouTube, or if you're listening to this as a podcast, you can search Luke Beasley on any podcast listening platform to listen to it. We'll be back with much more. Welcome back, everybody, to the David Pakman Show. Luke Beasley here filling in for David while he is away. Don't forget to check out my YouTube, Luke Beasley on YouTube, or Luke Beasley on any podcast listening platform if you are a listener. There was a Texas GOP convention over the weekend where a number of notable things happened. One of the big takeaways from a couple of these moments is that the far right isn't far right enough for the extreme, you know, radical right wingers that are becoming more prominent. So what I'm talking about is Dan Crenshaw was walking through an event and got aggressively accosted by some right wingers, not liberals. The left's not going after him. It's these far, far right people going after Dan Crenshaw, calling him a rhino, Republican in name only. Let's take a look at this video and then we'll discuss.
I pass McCain. Hey, I pass McCain. Look at I pass McCain right here. You're a rhino. You're a globalist. You're a globalist rhino.
And red flag laws too, Dan? That's ridiculous. Hey, Dan, why are you on the World Economic Forum Young Global Leaders? World Economic Forum Young Global Leader. Dan, What's Klaus Schwab's number? You got Klaus Schwab's number? Klaus Schwab's number, Dad.
So they're screaming at him, calling him a globalist rhino. Again, that's Republican in name only. And usually people call other Republicans rhinos if they're not pro-Trump enough or far-right enough. And then they also were calling him Eye Patch McCain, which is a term Tucker Carlson coined, which is bizarre. Why? I never understand. Stop going after people's physical features. Just go after their positions, their policies. That's it. It's crazy. Or their, you know, lack of principles, whatever it is. Anything that's not physical appearance related, or the fact that he's, you know, has damage to one of his eyes. You could see it seemed to escalate to actual violence. I couldn't quite tell with that video what happened, but from the reporting as well as what you could hear in the video, it looked like something really got physical besides just them kind of pressing up. And then I guess one of the guys was very upset that Dan Crenshaw is involved in the World Economic Forum, which I know very little about, but Klaus Schwab, he kept saying, is the founder of it. I don't know what his deal is with all of that, but the crazy thing is Dan Crenshaw is very pro-Trump and he's very conservative, but he just barely sort of critiqued Trump and wasn't the most, you know, outspoken, the election was stolen person. He kind of avoided that question. And then he supports red flag laws was one of the things they brought up. And that's what you're angry about? That tiny little difference between Trump and him and between you and him? He's a conservative guy and they're still not happy with him. It's crazy because their actual policy differences are so tiny. It just, they, you know, Dan Crenshaw doesn't appear radical enough for their liking. Because if you think about Democrats, AOC and Joe Manchin, the difference between those two people is way larger than any Republicans in their policy differences. And yet leftists aren't going out and accosting Joe Manchin like that. In the spirit of this, at the same Texas event, Ted Cruz got made fun of for being a Trump bootlicker, but in a contradictory way. You know, he first criticized Trump a lot on the campaign trail, and Trump alluded to his wife being ugly, and his dad may have caused, you know, done 9/11. Ted Cruz like, you don't talk about my family like that. I'm so against you. And then Trump wins the nomination, and Ted Cruz is mwah, mwah. So a guy walked up. He's not the hero, but he makes correct points. Let's take a look.
America, you know that. Remember how Trump made fun of your wife, and then you go become best friends with Trump? I know, but why do you do that? You go become best friends with Trump after he makes fun of you and your wife? Why do you do that?
I understand you don't want to defend Texas.
No, see, I do love America. See, you don't. You care more about the border between Ukraine and Russia than you care about the border between Texas and Mexico. Why is that? Why do you care about that?
God bless you.
I know, but why are you a globalist? You're a globalist, bud. You know it, Ted. Hey, Teddy, you're a globalist. You're a globalist, Ted. You know that, bud. And that's why you're a coward and a liar, and you know that, and I know that, and that's why you're afraid to stand up for it. When people were freezing and dying, you were in Cancun, Mexico. You remember that? You remember when you were at the all-inclusive buffet while people were freezing? No, but do you remember that, Ted, when everybody was freezing? Remember that, when people were dying?
So, like I said, that guy's a little off his rocker. If you ever hear someone use the term globalist, or as David Pakman says, impersonating Alex Jones, globalish. Most of the time, I guess you could use that term if you meant like someone who's pro-globalization, a globalist, or like pro... there could be an okay usage of that word definitionally, but the way that it's used in politics is almost always super conspiratorial and an indication that someone's a little... but the points he was making besides that weren't wrong, right? I mean, it can't be forgotten that Ted Cruz kissed up to Donald Trump after Trump alluded to his wife being ugly. Oh, maybe his dad did 9/11 is what Trump was spouting off about. And Ted was so brave at that point, characterizing Trump as such a terrible candidate. And then Trump won the nomination and Ted Cruz is the biggest bootlicker. And then also it shouldn't be forgotten, as that guy pointed out, that Texas was in that big freeze and Texans are or were suffering, and he flew off to Cancun and then blamed it on his daughters. That was so weird. This is a complete side note, but during that freeze, because it's popped up, this is a crazy cute story. At that point, my family, we were all here and we had 12 puppies. Not my entire family wasn't here, but I was here, sister, parents, and we had 12 puppies, golden retriever puppies from a golden retriever that we had, and or we still have. And these 12 puppies were at like little weeks old. And so whenever the freeze happened, all the power went out. And if they stayed out in our house when it got that cold, they would all have died. Luckily, we had one little space heater. So we packed in this tiny little room, used the space heater to keep the puppies alive. It was wild. And during all of that, instead of Ted Cruz coming and helping us with our puppies, no, he could have helped other people. He was off in Cancun living up the good life. So he's a goofball, the guy who walked up to Ted Cruz, but so is Ted Cruz. So he kind of deserves it. And the points he was making were definitely correct. And I love how Ted Cruz's reaction is always just completely not address what they're saying. He kept saying like, oh, I know you don't love Texas or you don't want to defend Texas. Okay, yeah, sure, Ted. So we discussed Dan Crenshaw getting harassed, Ted Cruz getting confronted by far right wingers at this event in Texas, the GOP convention in Texas that occurred over the weekend. Well, at the same convention, these Texas Republicans voted to officially declare the 2020 election of Joe Biden illegitimate. Meeting at their first in-person convention since 2018, Texas Republicans on Saturday acted on a raft of resolutions and proposed platform changes to move the party even further to the right. They approved measures declaring the president that President Joe Biden was not legitimately elected and rebuking Senator John Cornyn for taking part in bipartisan gun talks. They also voted on a platform that declares homosexuality an abnormal lifestyle choice and calls for Texas school children to learn about the humanity of the preborn child. So the second largest Republican Party in the country, second only to the National Republican Party, is coming out and saying that the election was stolen. They're proclaiming it. The election in 2020 was stolen. And this is incredibly damaging and frightening. And this is why, before I say this though, I have some conservatives in my audience who say that they watch my show. They don't agree with me on pretty much anything, but they feel like I'm level-headed so they can stand to watch it to get a sense of what the left believes. But then I've had a couple of them reach out and say, except you're hyperbolic on the Trump January 6th, you know, election being overturned stuff. And so whenever I hear criticisms, I always want to see if I can soak it in and see if there's any truth to it and see if I should change my own behaviors. But no, this is a great example. This is as bad as I'm describing it. Our democracy is being actively undermined by a major political figure and a major political party. If they get in power and something like this happens again, we know that our democracy may not survive. Because all the things that Trump tried to do leading up to January 6th and even beyond, and is still spouting off about now, if he was able to do this successfully, we would not have a democracy. Because an individual who did not win an election would have stayed in power. And that is not how a democracy functions. And so no, I'm not being hyperbolic on this. I promise you, even if you're conservative, really look at the facts of the situation. We have a massive threat to our democracy, and it comes in the form of Trump and the movement that he leads. And it's shameful that they don't all see that there's this active effort to chip away aggressively at the stability and strength of our democracy. It's wild. And maybe they do see it. This would be worse. And they just don't care. They might see it and not care. We've been doing a lot of coverage of this Texas GOP convention that occurred over the weekend. Just coincidentally, a lot of wild stuff happened at it. And one of those things was the organization of gay Republicans called the Log Cabin Republicans got banned from having a booth at the convention. So they were no longer allowed to show up at as an organization. Obviously, I'm sure individuals could have still gone. But because they represented a gay representation organization, they were not allowed to set up their normal booth. A group of Texas Republicans who represent conservatives in the LGBTQ community said they were denied the ability to set up a booth at the Texas Republican Party convention. The Log Cabin Republicans of Fort Worth, a chapter of the National Log Cabin Republicans organization, said they were not allowed to set up a booth at the convention, which took place in Houston over the weekend and featured several Republican organizations and vendors, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reported. The move prompted a comment from the National Log Cabin Republicans, whose president called the decision narrow-minded. It's clear that inclusion wins, which makes the Texas Republican Party leadership's decision to exclude the Texas Log Cabin Republicans from the convention not just narrow-minded, but politically short-sighted. President Charles Moron said in a statement citing former President Donald Trump's support of the LGBTQ Republicans. So that Charles, his name is M-O-R-A-N, I just want to say moron, Moron is correct that this is narrow-minded and short-sighted by the Republican Party. But it bothers me because even though in this situation, I don't at all think that his organization should have been banned from participating in that event, he should have known that that's the party he's been supporting for all of these years. He and his organization do this shameful thing where they give legitimacy to the outrageous claims that the right makes about the LGBTQ community. By, you know, they bolster it by also reciprocating those claims, but I'm an LGBTQ person, so I can get away with it, is what they do. And it's like, you should have known that the party you're standing behind, the party that you advocate on behalf of, does not stand for a world where you are included. And you should have expected this to happen eventually. You spew these lies and hate about the community that you're a part of. Eventually, they're going to come for you too. And it's just super fascinating. I guess to give some leeway to the organization, because gay marriage was legalized, there was this little moment, if y'all remember, where it seemed like maybe the Republican Party was going to talk less about the LGBTQ type stuff and pretend to be a little bit inclusive. If you remember, Trump literally said multiple times that he was a pro-gay president or whatever. Maybe not pro-gay, but an ally of the community. But then somewhat recently, they just turned the dial back to 11 and are focusing all of their hatred on LGBTQ Americans. So while the party shouldn't exclude this group, of course, from being a part of their conventions, a part of their party, the Log Cabin Republicans shouldn't have been supporting this party for all of these years. And this is the chickens coming home to roost, unfortunately. You can't join a party that is actively working to erase your existence and then claiming your existence is bad and wrong and then making your existence the center point of their hateful platform and then be surprised whenever they turn their backs on you. If you want to hear more of what I have to say on issues like this, don't forget to go to subscribe to my YouTube channel where I drop videos daily. You can find that by going to Luke Beasley on YouTube, or if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the podcast, there will be a link in the description you can click and it'll take you to my channel. You can also listen to my show as a podcast on any podcast listening platform. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to the David Pacman Show. Luke Beasley here, filling in for David today while he is away taking care of his new baby. If you like what you see here, definitely go subscribe to my YouTube channel by searching Luke Beasley on YouTube if you want to get the video form, or Luke Beasley on any podcast listening platform if you just want to listen. Father's Day was over the weekend, as I'm sure you're aware, and a lot of people spend Father's Day doing different things, but things like spending time with family, or if you're a father, maybe you have your family surround you and give you appreciation, go out barbecuing, whatever. You do something fun like that, but not if you're the former president, Donald Trump. Trump spent Father's Day angrily sending out messages on his social media site, Truth Social, just absolutely losing it. So here's the first sweet Father's Day message from Donald J. Trump. The highly partisan unselects are trying to create, I'm not going to do that the whole time, are trying to create a fake narrative for whatever reason, but only with evil intention, that he knew the election was stolen. This is completely false. I felt the election was rigged and stolen. I have from the very beginning, and I have only gotten stronger in that belief with time and large amounts of additional evidence and proof. In my mind, I have and have had no question, and many people would be willing to attest. Big, bold, all caps, all throughout that. But the unselects don't want to hear them. Okay, well, he started off strong Father's Day, but then he cools off. Maybe? No? What? Let's see. You ready for this? Witch hunt. That was his next message. All caps, witch hunt. That's it. It's too much. Former president. Surely now he's going to wrap it up. Enjoy his Father's Day. Spend some time eating a Big Mac with Ivanka. No. I am leading in every poll by a lot. And the Democrats are doing everything they can to change that, even if it's another Russia hoax, Mueller scam, impeachment waste of time, or whatever. The same lying people saying the same kind of thing. I only want to, and then in all caps, make America great again. So to the polling thing, he is doing a lot better in polling than he probably should be. That's crazy. Of the last four, he's beating Biden in two. So Biden's winning in two, he's winning in two. Not completely accurate what he said, but it's still, there's some truth to it that he is leading in recent polls. That's frightening. And next, he addresses the Georgia phone call that happened, of course, where he asked the Secretary of State to find him 11,000 whatever votes that would help him flip the election to being a win for him. My phone call to the Georgia Secretary of State with many other people, including numerous lawyers knowingly on the line, was absolutely perfect and appropriate. Yes, it was a perfect call, and so was the second call, for which the Washington Post was forced to do a major and somewhat embarrassing retraction. Thank you. Okay, so the Georgia call was fine, even though I was trying to pressure a Secretary of State to find 11,000-something votes that would help me win the election, even though I didn't. Perfect phone call. Well, finally, to wrap it up, I have to be fair, he did say at the very end, I want to wish everyone a beautiful Father's Day filled with peace, love, and compassion. No, he didn't say that at all. I have so many witnesses to everything good. That sentence is so weird. I have so many witnesses to everything good. But the highly partisan and one-sided Unselect Committee of Political Hacks has not interest in hearing or seeing them. This witch hunt could all be ended quickly if they did. So a little bit of a typo there, not interest. They have not interest. Very fascinating. But instead of hanging out with his children where they can say, you're a great father, they can lie and tell him that. Eric, Don, Ivanka, no. Instead, he was with them, I don't know, but not spending quality time, because instead he was ranting and raving about all of those things. What we're going to be looking at is super concerning. There is a GOP candidate for Senate in Missouri, Eric Greitens, who put out a campaign ad, and the whole ad is him and a few other guys going rhino hunting, which Republican in name only, rhino hunting. Now, instead of describing first how scary and all this type of stuff this is, let's just go ahead and take a look at the video.
Greitens, Navy SEAL, and today we're going rhino hunting. The rhino feeds on corruption and is marked by the stripes of cowardice. Join the MAGA crew. Get a rhino hunting permit. There's no bagging limit, no tagging limit, and it doesn't expire until we save our country.
So I know at this point you've probably seen a lot of campaign ads, particularly from Republicans that are promoting some level of violence, but you can't allow yourself to get numbed out to this type of terrible material. He releases an ad where his entire premise is around killing other Republicans, rhinos, Republicans in name only, for what, not being loyal enough to Trump, which is usually their issue with people, is they're not loyal enough, not a big enough Trump bootlicker. And there's not even a metaphor there. I mean, it's not like a thinly veiled threat of violence. No, he's just saying, y'all know rhinos, we say Republicans in name only. Yeah, let's go hunt them. Let's go kill them. That's the campaign ad. That's it. And literally, we're at the point where a candidate can, for the United States Senate, put out a campaign ad that they think is going to help their chances in the campaign, or they wouldn't have put it out, and say, hey, everyone, all my followers, let's go hunt people. Let's go hunt politicians. This is so normal now somehow. I mean, we're covering it, so it's not that normal. It's still crazy, but it's way more normal than it should be. And we've seen a number of Republican ads that are candidates holding a gun and talking about fighting the opposition and all these other insinuations of violence. But this is an escalation of violence that I'm so afraid of. This type of content that we're seeing become real common it's not funny, and it's not something that should be overlooked, because as this type of rhetoric escalates, the likelihood that real world violence will be inflicted becomes much more likely. And that's something that I'm super, super afraid of for our country. Luke Beasley here, filling in for David while he's away on paternity leave. We have a fascinating story to talk about. So as has been widely covered over the last few years, Amazon's work environment is pretty horrible. And there's been a lot of stories revealed about people not being able to go to the restroom properly, like they're driving down the road and they have so little time that they're expected to do something that they're going to the restroom, you know, in their car, in a bag or something, being expected to do way too much and not being treated correctly for it. And one of the reasons that this work environment was the way that it was actually sort of intentional. Amazon higher-ups had designed it where you get pushed so hard that there's no way you're going to stay very long. And they're okay with that. They're going to have a really high turnover rate, but then while you're there, extract as much work as possible and not treat you the way that you should be treated. So they go through a massive amount of employees each month and each year who just go in, they go out, they go in, they go out, and they grind them down so aggressively and so quickly. So besides public pressure, it was actually working for the higher-ups. You know, if you think from their perspective, they were getting a lot of work out of these people and making huge profits until now. And this is wild. Reading from Yahoo Finance, Amazon's no-frill, low-wage, high-turnover labor model is beginning to show signs of stress. The tech giant could run out of workers to hire for its warehouses by 2024, according to a leaked Amazon internal research memo from mid-2021 seen by the publication Recode, putting its service quality, growth plans, and quick labor churn model in a pinch. If we continue business as usual, Amazon will deplete the available labor supply in the U.S. network by 2024, the leaked report indicated. So because they push their workers so hard, they're literally going to be in a situation where at all these given warehouses, all the vicinity around where they can hire from aren't going to have enough employees, potential employees, who are within the type of employee that would work that particular position who haven't already left Amazon. Is that insane? So what is their solution? Well, reading again from Yahoo Finance, the memo said Amazon had six levers it could use to delay the labor crisis by a few years, including raising wages and increasing automation. But the only way to significantly alter this timeline is to make sweeping changes to the way it manages its employees. So obviously, automation could possibly help them with this, take away some of the jobs that they need, but it's not going to do it all. And so I love how they stumbled into what we've been all screaming at them for a long time now. You are one of the biggest corporations in the world. You make tons of money. You can afford to pay your workers correctly and treat them correctly. And it's crazy because they are just now realizing, hey, if we want people to work here, do we have to not abuse them? Do we have to be decent to them? Is that something that we have to do? Yes. Unbelievable. Well, I hope that they go in this direction, of course, and treat all of their workers the way that they deserve to be treated. Wish they could have figured this out earlier, but we'll take it now. Three of the big public January 6th Select Committee hearings have occurred, and one of the big questions people are asking amidst all of this is there any chance Trump will be held legally responsible for the actions he took, namely his attempt to overturn a free and fair election and keep himself in power? I covered the story that we're about to talk about on my own show. You can find it by just searching Luke Beasley on YouTube, or if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the podcast, it will be in the description. So you can just click a link. It'll take you there. Or you can just, like I said, search my name, Luke Beasley, on YouTube. And then David likely also covered this when it came out, but I thought it'd be really interesting to look at in the context of these hearings and all the revelations that have come out to take another look at this. So, quote, a former federal prosecutor who served for more than 24 years in the District of Columbia's U.S. Attorney's Office says Donald Trump could be arrested or indicted on just the evidence included in Monday's bombshell legal ruling by U.S. District Court Judge David O. Carter. So now it describes that legal ruling. Judge Carter's findings by a preponderance of the evidence, which says more likely than not that Trump committed felony offenses, is a higher evidentiary standard than the one needed to arrest and indict Trump for his crimes, which requires only probable cause. Judge Carter on Monday wrote, based on the evidence, the court finds it's more likely than not that President Trump corruptly attempted to obstruct the joint session of Congress on January 6, 2021. In response, legal experts are calling his ruling striking, massive, monumental, and historic. So this was a ruling about John Eastman, whether or not he had to turn over documents to the January 6th committee. But as you saw in there, this judge is saying it's likely there's enough evidence to indict Trump on criminal charges. That's insane. But obviously the big question is it likely? Okay, we can talk about, wow, he should be, but is this actually something that's going to happen? And at this point, I think David Pakman's assessment that we probably shouldn't be expecting to see Trump do the perp walk is still correct. Unfortunately, in the country we live in, powerful people are rarely held accountable to this extent. And actually, there's some other reasons for why Merrick Garland might be timid. And they're legitimate reasons. I don't think they're enough for him not to go through with it. But I read this op-ed by the New York Times that made a case for why it wouldn't be so crazy for Merrick Garland to be really, you know, soft and timid on this particular issue. And while I think it's wrong in its assessment, like, regardless of the backlash, regardless of the political claims that will be made, we should follow rule of law. If Trump committed crimes, he needs to be held criminally responsible. But I do understand how scary and wild it is to think about the aftermath of something like this. If Trump was indicted, the riots, the insane mayhem that would happen, I mean, that is something to be feared for sure. But that can't scare us away from doing what is right, which is holding Trump accountable if he committed crimes, of course. I'm not a legal expert. I would want the legal experts, of course, to analyze and see not just what Trump did, but compared to the law, how did he clearly break it? And if he did, he needs to be held responsible. It's also really horrible to think about the potential where the potential world where Trump is unsuccessfully prosecuted, and for the rest of time, he's just so bolstered in his claims that this is also political, and he's been correct the whole time, that this was all witch hunt. Don't like thinking about that hypothetical. So I think behind the scenes, Merrick Garland needs to make a really strong case, or see if he can make, based on the evidence, a really strong case. And if he can't, don't pursue it. But if there is a clear laws he violated, actions he took, evidence to prove it, then he needs to go through with it. Maybe he, you know, appoints a special prosecutor to do that process. But beforehand, he needs to see if there's such clear, hard evidence that this would be an undeniable case to prove. And you honestly wish that we would be in a country where people could look at this evidence and look at the actions that Trump took and change their mind. You know, like all of these people on the right, I wish they would just watch the January 6th hearings with an open mind and not think that this is all fake news. Because a lot of this is so clear what Trump did. And if they believed he did what he did, you would hope they would no longer want to support him. I don't know, maybe they're also just not for democracy, but hopefully you believe the only reason that they support this anti-democratic behavior is because they think it's saving the democracy because it was stolen from Trump, right? Just to kind of close, it is interesting. A majority of Americans do support indicting Trump, actually, but it's 54%, so it's not like the whole country or anything. The survey found that 54% of respondents backed the idea of the Department of Justice indicting the former president over the Capitol riot, compared to 37% who oppose the suggestion. Obviously, and I'll say this many times, it needs to come down to the evidence. Can the DOJ make an undeniable case that Trump violated certain laws? Here they are, and here's the evidence of those violations. And if they can, then he should absolutely be prosecuted. Let me know in the comments what you guys think. I'm super curious to hear. Likely, unlikely, give me your assessment definitely in the comments. Thank you so much to the Dave Hackman Show for having me guest host today. You can check out my channel if you're watching on YouTube or listening to the podcast just by going to the description and clicking the link. It'll take you to my channel. Or if you're coming from another place, just search Luke Beasley on YouTube or Luke Beasley on any podcast listening platform, and you should be able to find my show.
Stoking up the fire that I Thank you. Varsity Insane from Way Out.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT...
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And so, to be clear, did you hear the White House Counsel's Office say that this plan to have alternate electors meet and cast votes for Donald Trump in states that he had lost was not legally sound?
Yes, sir.
At the fourth public hearing of the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, state and local officials described threats and harassment they faced from President Trump and his campaign to overturn the 2020 election. Among them, a black election worker and her mother in Georgia, whose lives were forever changed when Trump and Rudy Giuliani claimed the women helped rig the vote when Trump lost in their state.
There is nowhere I feel safe. Nowhere. Do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States to target you? The President of the United States is supposed to represent every American, not to target one. But he targeted me.
We'll bring you their testimony, as well as other highlights from the hearing, including Republicans like Arizona House Speaker Rusty Bowers, who voted for Trump and said he would vote for him again, but said he and his family faced violent threats after Bowers refused Trump's request to overturn his election loss in his state.
Should name groups, but there was one gentleman that had the three bars on his chest. And he had a pistol and was threatening my neighbor, not with the pistol, but just vocally. When I saw the gun, I knew I had to get close.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Afghanistan, officials say at least 1,000 people have died, while some 1,500 have been injured after a powerful earthquake early Wednesday. The epicenter of the quake was about 30 miles from the city of Khost near the Pakistan border. Aftershocks were felt as far away as Kabul. Survivors described seeing numerous homes destroyed.
It was about midnight when the quake struck. It destroyed the houses of our neighbors. When we arrived, there were many dead and wounded. They sent us to the hospital. I also saw many dead bodies.
The earthquake comes at a time when Afghanistan is already facing one of the world's worst humanitarian and economic crises. A recent report by the Red Cross found 70% of Afghan households are unable to meet basic food needs, and an estimated 3 million Afghan children are at risk of malnutrition. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection has accused Donald Trump of playing a direct and personal role in pressuring state and local officials to help overturn Joe Biden's 2020 election victory. This is the committee chair, Benny Thompson.
What happened to Mike Pence wasn't an isolated part of Donald Trump's scheme to overturn the election. In fact, pressuring public servants into betraying their oaths was a fundamental part of the playbook.
Part of Trump's plan involves states sending fake slates of electors to be counted on January 6. The committee revealed Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson took part in the plot. On January 6, an aide to Johnson texted an aide to then-Vice President Mike Pence, saying Johnson wanted to